That's what happens when you're still rusty after spending a month in what is that we were doing? Pre-tapes. Yeah. So welcome to Open Source of Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is
Scotty Hertz, shaking his fist at this computer, and also full of cake because today is the McLaughlin Library's 50th birthday. So happy birthday, McLaughlin Library. And yesterday was somebody else's birthday.
Yeah.
He's a few years younger than the McLaughlin Library, but happy birthday to Adam A. Donaldson as well.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm still getting birthday messages on Facebook, so it's like
excellent.
It's like it's never over. It's
The people care,
which is nice. Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. That last one is new. Mm. You can get us on Spotify now. Today, we are back to business as unusual. We'll be talking about the apparent murder of Jamal Khashoggi, and the apparent unwillingness by anyone's old Saudi Arabia account for it, or on anything really. But then there's also this. It's been a week since pot was legalized across Canada, and absolutely nothing has gone wrong, except maybe we're running out of cannabis and Canada Post is going on strike. So maybe a couple of things. And then finally, we will look ahead to the next election, the federal one in 2019. But first, we're going to wrap up our 2018 municipal election coverage. We were here from 8 till 10 on election night. And you can listen to the whole thing on this week's Politicast if you like. But first, we have a very serious issue to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
Meghan Markle got off a plane in New Zealand, and the tag was still on the dress.
Oh, my goodness.
No, please, please. This is serious.
It was actually her voter card was stapled to her dress by mistake. Is that what happened? No.
The peg?
He's openly weeping, people.
That was all the
I
dress.
Think you understand.
No, seriously, here's our serious
G-talk
thing.
G-Talk Nightly. That's our opener.
Okay, we have a ticket giveaway to start off today. In Conversation with Santi Smith is happening Wednesday, November the 7th at 8 p.m. at the River Run Center. If you win one of three pairs of tickets we have to give away today, you will be able to pick them up on the night of at the River Run Center. So Santi Smith is the founder and artistic director, and I hope I say this right, of Gahawi Dance Theater. Each evening includes two 40-minute interview sets and ends with a post-show meet and greet. Everyone comes away with the story behind the person. Smith is internationally recognized as a leader in Indigenous performance art. Santi Smith is a dancer, producer, choreographer, and designer from the Mohawk Nation of Six Nations of the Grand River. She will discuss her life in dance and music through an intimate interview with host Cameron Smiley that will include video clips. So, as I said, we have three pairs of tickets available. Just call 519-837-2378. Leave your name and contact information, and we will make sure a pair of tickets is set aside for you. Now to get into the show. The tag was on the dress. No.
a full hour.
Full hour on this massive issue, but no. When we left the air on Monday night, it was almost completely sewn up. I think there were like four polls left, and it looked like there may have been an upset in Ward 4, but it turned out there wasn't. So 11 out of the 13 people who were running for re-election were re-elected. The two new faces, if you don't already know, are Rodrigo Galler in Ward 2 and Dominique O'Rourke in Ward 6. And, I mean, this is in Guelph, so just in case, you know, you were thinking we're going to talk about Brampton or Toronto or something, we might
maybe
get to that
a little bit.
But, yeah, so it's, I think it was, I mean, Dominique O'Rourke's victory was a blowout.
Yes.
Which was, I found surprising. I knew she was, like, well-known in the community and well-liked, but I didn't know she was that well-liked. So.
Yeah. Well, and it was in post-game analysis, too, she did everything right.
Yeah.
From kickoff, her face was everywhere.
Yeah.
And she liked both of us on Twitter pretty much right away.
Yeah.
So, of course, that's a certainty that things are going to be okay.
The open source
when
is
you're following the open sources team, you know, you've got a good shot at it. We have a proven track record of sending people. No, I'm just kidding.
We kind of do.
Right, sort of, yeah.
I just want to point out this wasn't like sort of a unique wall phenomenon, because I was looking at the other numbers around the area, and almost everyone who was an incumbent running except one was reelected in Kitchener, and that includes the mayor, who won with 85%. Dave Jaworski won reelection in Waterloo with 7.85%, and there was a little more turnover there. There weren't as many people running for reelection.
Sorry, that was the gap, or that's what he won by?
No, that's what he won by.
7%?
70.85%.
Oh, 70. Sorry, I heard
No, he won 70.85% of the vote.
Resounding.
And then in Cambridge, everyone who was running for re-election for Cambridge Council won, but the mayor was defeated. The five-term mayor, Doug Craig, was defeated. Instead, he was defeated by a friend of the show, Catherine McGarry, who's now going to be the mayor of Cambridge.
See, she was here, and now she's the mayor.
It is?
Now she's the mayor.
It is true. Damn. Okay.
We won't make any guarantees, but you see, there are certain people that don't want to come on the show, but if you do... It's definitely the open sources bump. It's a proven, we're going to get a statistician to just do the math because it happens.
And for the region of Waterloo, because it was one of those later ones that came in yesterday, Karen Redman was elected to be Waterloo Region Chair. She won with 62%, and her nearest competitor was Rob Deutschman, who I didn't put two and two together, but he's like the injury lawyer.
Oh, yeah.
He got 19% of the vote.
And how long has it been since Karen Redman was out? She was federal or provincial?
I thought she was both at one point.
Yeah, so she's a well-known, a known-known. So
she's a known-known.
She got the gig. I suppose, an upset of sorts, but the only sort of major change in Guelph was the school board with Susan Mosier and Marty Fairburn, both long-termers on the school board. Getting the boots.
Yeah, and it was interesting that the Ward 6 post-lunch one was close. It was, you know, Jolie Betty won, which is good. I mean, so there's some, like, representation for visible minorities on the school board now. And at least some, you know, representation for visible minorities in Guelph on one of these bodies, because that was one of the takeaways of this election, was like the diversity, so many women running, so many people of color running. I think that was a very positive. It also showed some inherent ugliness from some of the stories I've seen about, in terms of white Guelph, let's say. But at the same time,
white Guelph for so long.
Yeah.
Times are finally a change, and it took till the 21st century, but yeah, pretty
yeah.
much. Right?
I mean, the flip side to that story, too, though, is that Toronto City Council, and I think the Toronto Star had this story, that there were as many people named Michael on City Council now as there are visible minorities, which I think is like the bad news story.
Including Michael Ford.
Well, yeah.
What was his name before? No, we don't go by that name now anymore. Legally, he's something else. But
yeah, so it's... You know, we take a step forward, and, you know, it seems like Toronto took a step back.
Although in some ways, and we mentioned it on election night, that Giorgio Mammoliti, George Mammoliti, lost his job. But the Mammoliti name lives on because his son is now a school board trustee. I believe his name's Christopher Mammoliti.
Oh, good.
John Trammell in Bradenford, 128 votes or 0.53.
Good for
so
him.
I thought I should mention that because, you know, we follow him everywhere he goes all elections.
How far is he from 100?
He must be close. I said this on Twitter that he's a most annoying individual, but I really, really want him to get a century of races in the basement. And speaking of close races, there was a Elgin County, Dutton Dunwich. The incumbent mayor lost by one vote.
It was 96.
96 races.
Hold on.
He's getting close. Anyway, one vote gap in
this was from hold
to
on.
The deputy mayor. So when you don't think every vote counts, there's an example there. And it's happened in town. When I say in town, I mean Guelph. It's happened here before too. 1-2 vote specials. So it always pays to vote if you can.
He lost in September. He lost his 96. So this might be the 97th one.
So we got a federal next year.
Well, there's also by-elections he could run in.
Yeah, he could go all the way out to... we'll talk about the by-elections when the
I wonder if he'd come on like to celebrate his 100th campaign.
I think we should try.
Yeah, cool. Cool.
Although he's jabbed me a couple of times online, but so what?
Well, he jabbed me a couple of times. I mean, and this was in the nascent days of Guelph Politico before it was Guelph Politico. This was like,
yeah, I think he just Googles himself and tries to find his name somewhere and whatever he was saying.
This is when it was the Guelph Federal by-election blog, yeah, 2008.
Yes.
And he was like, you don't know. Yeah.
That's when he had that hissy fit and got thrown out of the,
yeah, that was
the River Run, which was hilarious.
It.
So.
That was it. I want to talk a bit about the quote-unquote voter suppression that happened here in town.
I love the headline. Was it the Today or the Mercury? Yeah.
No, it was Merck. It was the Merck.
I could just hear that conversation.
Yeah. I mean, what it's looking like more and more, it was just like somebody at ICC. I haven't heard of an incident happening anywhere else. It seems like this was maybe one or two people who...
overstepped.
Either, yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, you can sort of read an alt-righty implication in the, you know, asking people to prove that they were born here.
Sounds like somebody working at border security.
Yeah.
I mean, you can use those. Those things aren't specifically on the list, right? Birth certificate and passport. They're on any other, they fall under any other government.
Well, they
document.
Want to see your address.
Right.
That's the point. They want to see your address. Right. But your
birth
address isn't on your birth certificate
your
or your passport.
Might be on your
which
passport.
Is why it's kind of weird.
Students in towns' passports don't match.
I mean, I had my passport on me, I had my health card on me, but I had a piece of mail on me because that's what I used to prove my address. And the piece of mail was fine. And I didn't have a
which
voter.
Which seems funny as well, you know?
I mean, I didn't vote at ICC either. I voted early at City Hall. So maybe
yeah,
that was...
Yeah, me too. Did it? Yes.
That
yeah.
was different, like people who were sort of differently trained or maybe people who are more hardcore election workers.
Sometimes you see the same faces at these things
a lot. Yeah.
You used to see Barb Mann at them, but since she was a candidate this time, I guess she mm-hmm. couldn't. Although she ended up... She happened to be there, I think, when the incident happened.
Well, or one of the incidents, because I think it was kind of like something that happened over a period of a couple of hours. There were some people.
And then there was the lineup at the Super Bowl over, or the Super Bowl? The Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl poll. The Super Bowl, the West End Rec Center,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
a.k.a. the Costco poll. I made the joke online that they probably should have just held it in the Costco and everything would have been fine. But yeah, I guess there's certain ones that are busier than others, and it's too bad that it sounds like people walked away from that as well.
I don't know
if that adds to the low turnout of 37%.
Yeah.
It will probably not even register as a percentage point the amount of people that didn't vote. I'm not saying, I'm obviously not making an excuse for them not being able to, because you absolutely should be able to, because there's 57,000 out there in this town that did not even bother.
Well, I wonder what it was like other sort of nearby polls, like Taylor Evans, if it was dead over at Taylor Evans because everyone went to Westwood, because Westwood's like a knowable sort of city landmark.
Yeah.
And how many people just went to Westwood because that was easy easy to remember and easy to get to. It's sort of centrally located there across from the Zares Plaza and across from Costco and the library's there. So a lot of people know it in the West End, obviously.
Yeah.
It is sad that some people would just sort of like pack it in and just like, oh, forget, like, oh, long line, like going to, I don't know, like the food court. Like you want to have New York fries, but the line at New York fries is too long, so you go to Manchu
Walk.
Well,
if they gave you New York fries when you voted,
maybe
it would probably double. You get 60%.
But still, I mean, I hate that kind of attitude. It's like, I want to vote, but it's not important enough for me to wait in line for 20 minutes or whatever. Come on. There are people in the south of the border who wait in line for hours.
The Netflix will still be there when you're done. They really
do.
Like you can just dial it up anytime.
Right. The other thing.
Sorry.
Patrick
Brown?
I don't want to freaking talk about him.
Yeah.
Although I found it laughable that the next day they cancel a project to expand Ryerson in Brampton. I mean,
Brampton may regret it because everything that was going to go there is just going to be
that
like,
is bizarre. Ooh. That the next day there's the can't. I mean, yeah, it also affects Milton and
yeah.
I can't remember the other place.
Hamburg or in Etobicoke. No? Or no? Laurier at Brantford?
It was Laurier at Milton.
Or Milton. Okay.
But I can't remember where the other place was. But yeah, that like the next day, a major project in Brampton is canceled. It's like the ball's on Tug Ford, man. Yeah. It's crazy.
So last thing before they adjourn will be that Brampton is just canceled.
But Cambridge voted to, they had a referendum on ranked voting, and they won, the yes side won 13,000 votes to 10,000 votes. So it's pretty decisive that it looks like they'll have ranked balloting in the next one.
And it sounds like the ranked ballot in London went okay.
Yeah,
14
although
rounds
was,
for mayor.
Yeah, Ford's to get mayor. Yeah. What's his name? Ed. I wrote it down too. Bloody hell.
Ed Holder,
who's a former conservative cabinet minister and was basically running against bus rapid transit, which you can look this up online, but it's the whole idea to create a rapid transit system with the buses,
yep,
like dedicated lanes and stuff that the last London council came up with. Of course, the mayor there couldn't run again because he was too busy having extracurricular meetings with one of the councillors, if you know what I mean.
Oh.
So
how salacious.
It is salacious. And then the other thing was the internet voting going boink.
Yes.
In 51 municipalities.
A moth flew into the mainframe. And
something weird happened, and it's actually going to be the topic of a Guelph Politicast next week. But I did run across this one article by the CBC that interviewed Sue Foxon, who's the mayor of North Dumfries. Who said that they were having problems. I don't think it was necessarily tied to what was happening with Dominion, but it had to do with, like, it's a rural area, so internet access can be slow.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently there was some confusion about people about how to
the modem handshaking protocol? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, well, maybe. But there was some confusion with people, like, how to do internet voting. But their internet voting was down 2% over 2014. So I my fear is just like people are going to look at the 37% number here and go, it's because we didn't have internet voting. Well, you know what? Everywhere doesn't create more voting. They had internet voting in North Dumfries. It didn't create more. There was actually less. So
it's not this panacea that he's going to throw out and like everybody's going to vote.
Right. Because
until they make it the law or mandatory, it ain't going to happen.
Right. Because my concern is I want to have like a really big, huge, multilateral debate about online voting. I don't want it to be, we want online voting, these people don't want you to have online voting, or vice versa, because it's much more complicated. And the thing I took away from my conversation with Alexander Essex, who's an expert on these things, is that it's very, very complicated.
Well, let's do that debate. We can invite him, and we can make that happen.
Why is it always on us? Okay.
We're the last line of defense.
We're the last line of defense. We're the men in black. Okay, so this is much more serious, obviously, but Jamal Khashoggi was a columnist for the Washington Post. A couple of weeks ago, he went into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, and he did not walk out, despite what the Saudi government said. And if there's breaking news on this today, at the investment conference that's going on, despite the sort of refusal of a lot of Western people to attend, Mohammed bin Salam said that they revised the story again to say that yes, it looks like some people did kill Jamal Khashoggi inside the Saudi consulate. He didn't sanction it, though. But this is the third time they've revised the story. Of course, the first time was that he walked out perfectly fine, like out a side door somewhere where there was no camera, even though his fiance was waiting for him out front.
And he had more hair somehow.
Yeah. And then that story shifted last week to he was in a fist fight with the 15 rogue Saudis who somehow sneaked into the consulate and was accidentally killed. And now MBS, who's the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, basically running the place now, said, you know what? Yeah, maybe it was premeditated murder and some people went in there to kill him. And then all this too. Plus, it's been reported that CIA Director Gina Haspel has heard the Turkish recording of Jamal Khashoggi being killed. Which is something that's never been confirmed because this would be like deep, deep, deep sort of interstate espionage that the Turkish government would have bugs inside the Saudi consulate, which would be a big, technically a no-no, given international law. But
yeah, and I'd heard one that it was Khashoggi's iPhone watch or something, but there's all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I hate to say this, but Trump occasionally gets it right when he said it. Can you believe I said that? Because, well, I mean, and then he goes, drives it into the ditch. But he said it's the worst cover-up ever.
Broken clock is right twice a day.
Yeah, the worst cover-up ever. It has to be the worst espionage ever, or at least attempt at assassination. It took 15 people. How many Saudis were involved in 9/11? 19 or 15?
Well, 15 of the 19 were Saudis.
Is that some kind of magic number for them or something? It takes 15 people to take out a journalist?
Well, one of them had a bone. I assume there was like some sort of specialty. Like maybe three of them were, you know, experts in dismemberment, and maybe two were experts in like chloroform. I don't know. It's
like when you see the people standing around the manhole; they all are actually there for a different reason.
Yeah, yeah. They're all different talents.
But then of course Trump started talking about how it was a bad deal, and I'm like, yeah, he really is officially losing it. It was only rumor. He started talking about deals and how it was a bad deal with. There's no deal. There's no deal here. The guy walked in and didn't walk out again.
Right.
And the worst, too, I take it you saw the picture of Khashoggi's son having to shake
my goodness,
hands
yeah.
with the prince.
Because
you can't hide that kind of look on your face. It's like, geez.
Not only did they kill his father.
You're going to come in here and you're going to shake his...
Right. And this would seem to be like maybe a bit of quid pro quo because Khashoggi's children lived in Saudi Arabia, but their movements have been
curtailed
because of Khashoggi's outspokenness. His son has since left Saudi Arabia.
Oh, he did. Okay, that's
after good. This very staged meeting
the
between
worst.
Him and MBS and the king.
It was like North Korea grade propaganda.
It does seem like it's like when North Korea wheels out some American they've arrested for you know something. It's like, I'm deeply sorry to the Korean people, and then he's allowed to go home.
And the kid did
and
nothing wrong.
So I mean, this is like sketchy beyond sketchy. The question is now, I guess, is like what's going to happen?
And I find it very interesting too, the Turkey's approach to this. Turkey, mm-hmm. who are just ranting on about this. Turkey is the number one jailer of journalists in the world. Yet somehow this one guy has not managed to push the button, but okay, you've changed your tune on this one person and this one story because you don't like the Saudis, but yeah, they jail
people. Erdogan will lock up a journalist, but he won't butcher one with a bone saw, which is kind of an unusual place to cut the bread. It does seem like, I don't know, I think they take offense to the fact it was done on, I mean, even though consulates and embassies are technically the soil of the country they belong to, I guess it still happened in Turkey, which Erdogan probably hates. Because
it's an excuse to beat on the Saudis, right?
Right, there's that too. But I mean, the whole situation is sort of waking up people to just how awful Saudi Arabia is, and also how dictatorial MBS is.
Because he's supposed to be better. He's a moderate,
right?
Compared to dad,
he let women drive. He brought movies back.
One of them reads the news now. Oh,
yeah.
Yay.
So, meanwhile, there's a civil war going on in Yemen that they are a big part of keeping going. And it's being called by the UN the worst humanitarian crisis in the world right now. Maybe as many as 13 million people might end up starving to death because of it.
And there's some likelihood that Canada is a small part in that, at least.
Because of the LAVs.
Because the LAVs. And you want to talk about the ultimate in dodge. I saw both of them do it, Trudeau. Who else was talking about it? At the press conference the other day, and it was like the complete deke on the question.
Freeland answered, she
did the old, well, we're gravely concerned. When asked directly about it, they said, well, what about the LEV contract? And then the excuses are being made. It's like, well, it'll be a big penalty if we do that. So you can't talk human rights out of one side of your mouth and then talk about this deal. As Trump would put it, it's all about the deal with the LAVs, they need to come up with something else.
Well, they,
or another market, or because they, these, right. these, I think we've talked about this before, how these yeah. vehicles are pretty much just an armored vehicle, and then you can trick it out however you like. So the Canadian argument is, well, we're just selling them this armored car. But then, of course, a bunch of them have very large guns mounted to them.
Yeah.
But then the American deal, which we don't know how much it is because Trump can't come up with a consistent number, it's anywhere from $110 billion, which I believe is closer to the deal, which is a massive number. But it's been as high as $450 billion in Trump's mind.
Well,
I've and the
heard...
number of jobs, too, has yeah. gone from like, oh, it's thousands to a million jobs. It's a million jobs. We can't get rid of that
well, I've
over
heard,
this.
I've heard people say that, you know, in terms of the actual dollars at stake, it's probably closer to 20 million. Because
billion or million?
20 billion.
20 billion, yes. It's
billions. Then 110 billion. Yeah, there's kind of like a...
It's the spin-off.
Some kind of memorandum like, there. Yeah, we can spend 110 million, but they're probably more likely to order just like 20 billion worth of stuff. So it's... The thing about Trump is the... I find that his first reaction is always the most telling, and his first reaction when this news hit was, well, he's not even an American citizen, is he?
Oh,
which
yeah,
was
yeah.
strike one. He's not an American citizen. He's a resident of the United States.
And he's a journalist.
He's a journalist for the Amazon Washington Post.
Strike
two.
Yes.
And then we have billions of dollars in investment from Saudi Arabia. Strike three. We can also add a strike four because Jared Kushner's in pretty deep with the Saudis because he bought a money pit on Fifth Avenue for billions of dollars right before the stock market crashed in 2008 because he's such a hidden genius. But, yeah. So, I mean, there's whole other levels. And the Canadian angle, too, is... Trudeau's trying to shovel it all on Harper. Like, they made this ironclad deal. And he was on with Matt Galloway the other day.
Oh,
and
yeah,
he's like,
I saw a little bit of that.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, oh, this was an ironclad deal. There are penalties attached. And Galloway, of course, like, okay, well, what kind of penalties are there? And he's like, I can't really say that because there's penalties if I talk about it. So
but
it's
we're
like,
gravely concerned.
It's like freaking Fight Club. You know, the first rule of arms sales to the Saudis is you can't talk about arms sales to the Saudis. Come on, really? So
you define the power crawler that made the deal. And
I understand, and we've talked about this before. Yes, there are good paying jobs in London.
Is that liberal writing currently? Or?
I believe it is.
There you go.
But
in my view,
like there has to be like, can we just like maybe sell them to the Canadian military or something? Are we talking about more military spending here?
Our gear is like sort of lousy, but.
Yeah,
I guess we don't get our own money back if it's a closed cycle. But
well, still, I mean,
that's a whole other story.
If you pay for these guys to make light armored vehicles, they're still getting anyway.
Sure,
we're not going to solve the economy in a day.
No,
okay.
Or the war machine.
No, we're definitely not going to solve the war machine, but we can enjoy a nice toke now, and it would be totally legal. But we're going to talk about. Marijuana legalization, and we're going to look ahead to, maybe not look ahead all the way to the election, but we'll talk about what's going on in Ottawa right now, more broadly. And we're going to play some music before that. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on I almost said Saturday Night Live for some reason. I don't know why I'm thinking about Saturday Night Live.
It's G Talk Nightly featuring.
Shut up!
He hates that one.
Anyway,
I'm going to do it.
You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
That was Burnaby City Councillor Joey Keithley from the band DOA more than, probably 35 years ago. That's from the Vinyl Vault. DOA, War on 45, 8 great tunes of the 80s, marching into the 80s, and that song was called I'm right, you're wrong. And I've been advised not to say his nickname because this is a family show. But when I start doing G-Talk Nightly at 10 p.m., every night, I'm just going to play punk rock instrumentals and swear my frickin' head off. Anyway, punk rock wins in the West Coast.
Yeah. Well, what else is new? Maybe punk rock will win in Texas in a couple of weeks. We'll see.
Ooh, yes. Beto O'Rourke will play his band.
Do we have any music?
Oh, we'll find it. All right. Yeah.
Okay, so pot was legalized a week ago yesterday, and society fell apart, and Canada's pretty much over.
There's flames outside the studio.
You may not have noticed because there was a municipal election going on. No, it seems to me that... you know, all those years of people talking about reefer madness.
Play faster.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's almost surprising how it's been like a week later and it's kind of...
You don't even hear about it.
Over, yeah.
All I heard this week was the financials, was stocks.
Yeah.
$450 million made in 2 days by people short selling cannabis stocks. That's what's going on. So the truth comes out after the whole, you know, mellow yellow scenes. I happened to be off last week because I had a pretty bad cold, and it, like, I was just so sick at the end of the news cycle. Well, I was also sick, but just watching it was like, come on, there has to be more.
Well,
but there isn't any more. It's like, okay, they were just trying to make stories where there weren't really stories, but the real story seems to be money.
Right. And I mean, but that was always, like, there was a story, I think it was in the National Post, that's like, all these prohibition guys now, like, are now making money off of pot.
Fantino. So, Julian Fantino. How many people do you think Julian Fantino sent to jail?
A lot.
Who had doobies on them.
A lot.
And Mulroney, too, yeah, interestingly.
I mean, we've gone straight over from the serious consideration to, like, the societal change. We've gotten the economic news from this. Now we're, like, into the silly season of it. Because now the TVO's taking Tokaru to court for
Is that happening?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the Polkadot door is finished now, right? But
yeah, but I guess TVO still owns the rights to the character. And the guy playing Tokaru is the guy who played Tokaru for 22 years. So it's kind of hilarious.
Oh, I always thought it was whoever went missing on the show was, you know, like, I don't know, in the suit, but maybe not.
Right, because someone always saw poker room.
They had a bigger budget then. I don't know. There is no budget now. They don't have in-house shows, do they? I did see Tokaru, like, though, and that was pretty funny. I laughed pretty hard when I saw Tokaru.
I laughed at the Tokaru, but I also laughed at the bong, which, you know, clearly the part where you inhale was like the phallus of the bong man. It was...
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, that was, I mean, he was right there with Tokaru, so. But we're getting...
This is what we've been reduced to.
This is what we've been reduced to. On CTV News Channel today, they actually interviewed Tokaru, the guy who played...
And the whole interview went, Tokaru!
No, not quite like that. But he wasn't wearing the head. But, like... Marcia McMillan was like full Helen Lovejoy mode, like about like encouraging kids to smoke weed. I'm like, no kid is looking at that freaking thing in that freaking costume and thinking, boy, smoking weed looks awesome because it's like it's covered in like shaggy brown fur, its eyes are bloodshot, it's carrying a big stick that looks like it's lit on the wall. Like, kids aren't looking at that and go, I want to be cool and smoke Plus, up, kids, Johnny. It's crazy.
Kids now don't know the polka dot door. It hasn't been off the air for like 20 years or something.
I want to say
it'd
yes.
It'd be like somebody going Hold as on. Captain Smokaroo or something, right? Or,
but I mean,
I just made a thing up. I should do that. Captain
it's like
Smokaroo.
Saying, like, I'm going to take my kid to the next Chucky movie and he's going to see a doll kill people and want to kill people too. It's insane. It's craziness
because we know that happens, right?
But I
more likely to try and kill people after hearing a Trump speech. But anyway,
polka dot door ran.
I could sing you the song probably. I know, sort of weird.
Well, I'm trying to find out when it was.
I won't
ended.
Sing the song, but
it ran until 87, I guess.
87. Wow.
Yeah. Oh no, it went to 93 actually. 1971 to 93.
And I'm sure a lot of people were very high whilst watching it. Not the children, of course, because, you know, they were talking to the dolls. The dolls don't talk. They don't move.
No doubt.
It's the same as BBC Play School. We could get totally into Polka Dot Door. We should make it a topic for one show.
I'm not done talking about Helen Lovejoy, because she was also interviewing Caroline Mulrooney last week.
And she was high. That in would both be official languages.
But no, like, the Ontario government rolled out this thing like, sure, it's legal, but is it safe? And Marcy McLean asked this asinine question. I don't know if she was throwing softball interviews at Caroline Mulrooney because she was a colleague's sister, or because she's like really this like anti-pot figure who's like masquerading as a journalist right now. But she asked like Caroline Mulrooney, would your government really rather not be dealing with this right now? And I was like, really? Really?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but the Ford government is the one, they've screwed up big time on this. And I think...
Well, because you can't actually... Your access to it is very limited. They were saying, we want free markets. We want open markets. We want everybody to be able to deal with it. So it's going to be in the shops.
Later.
Which is what the pot stores wanted. But later. Right. Yeah. So now if you want it, what do you get away? It's online. There might be a mail strike. A lot of people aren't comfortable giving all of their info and intel and their credit card, actually.
Right.
To the government.
Meanwhile, they shut down all the private places because they're breaking the law.
They really, really dropped the ball.
And I mean, the story goes deeper than that, because there was a picture on social media. Somebody posted that somebody who ordered like small samples of different types of pot, and they send like 16 big boxes. And this is a frequent story, that you get these boxes that just have so much wasteful packaging in them.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
And there have been problems with the ordering system. People have talked about how they've had their orders canceled, and then they don't find out that the orders are canceled, so they're waiting for days for
shortages now, for obviously. Which will make the stock go up. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, it's that part of it is a repeat of something that happened in Oregon when they legalized it, that the supply was not there initially, so prices fluctuated rapidly up and down. And we're seeing the similar thing happen here. I think it's a matter of like, maybe you can never really be too prepared when you're introducing like a product this sort of new. I mean, it's not new, but I mean, in terms of it being legal, it is new. So
the suppliers seemed ready. Everything seemed ready enough. But of course, when they, since the newish government is taking a hammer to everything. To all, you know, would that system that the Liberals came up with have been so bad? But first it was the test stores, and then, of course, that's not happening. I was wondering, can you order it from another province? What's to stop you from interprovincial weed trade? Like, could you just order it from Quebec or something?
That's a good question.
Could you order it from... I'm not sure. I know you're not really supposed to take a booze over the border without paying duty, but I'm sure somebody's trying it, because who knows? Maybe there's a strain somewhere out in Saskatchewan that somebody wants. What's to stop you from ordering that? You're a Canadian. It's not leaving the border. It's stuck in the mail system, possibly, but who knows? But something that happened, and I had mentioned this online too, if you follow me on Facebook, about the armed robbers breaking into the greenhouse in Beaverton, tying up the workers and taking a bunch of stuff. Now, they said, of course, that the whole point of legalizing it was to, you know, crack down on organized crime and not turn people who consume this into criminals. And yet here we have almost right away, like 48 hours after legalization. Maybe it's because it was up in Beaverton. They thought, oh, well, you know, nobody will be looking. Nobody will be. But you can bet that any greenhouse that's carrying marijuana. And there's actually going to be some on research stuff on campus, a brand new greenhouse being built, at least this is the rumor, for pot research. So I'm sure U of G is probably going to have to step it up too in terms of security.
Right. Well,
beyond bicycles, which they haven't, but that's another story.
That was inevitable.
Just to feed drug habits.
I think that was inevitable, though, given the U of G's background with cultivation.
Oh, no, I think it's a great, don't get me wrong, but it's like, it's one of those things where, you know, if you've got armed robbers tying. Just people who are picking it up.
It's a legal gray zone, to answer your other question.
Oh, about what? If you can buy it in a prison?
Yeah, it seems.
If anybody
to be...
knows, let us know via the channels, because I'm curious. I suppose we'll find out. I suppose these are the things we're supposed to know, but I hadn't thought about it until right now, actually. So,
no, and that's fair.
Not that I'm gasping for some product, let's say, but
If you know where you can get
I've
some.
I've got this friend that really. Yeah.
If you know where to get some dank
he
bud.
He has sciatica.
Get in touch with Scotty Hurt. Because yeah.
You would think Tweed has had a medical, I guess, dispensary or place where you can sign up in town in the old Quebec Street Mall. But yet you couldn't go there and get anything, which doesn't make any sense. I'm fairly sure once everything gets sorted out, which I think is supposed to be in April, that store will probably just be selling stuff. That's my guess, not a certainty. And of course, it'll be the busiest store in Quebec Street Mall.
Dank bud,
next
real
to
sticky
the,
weed.
Where you get your scans done. But anyway, that's, that's another story, right?
No, it's...
Or the washrooms.
The other piece of this was... how people would react going to the States, and apparently it's not a big deal. The border people, the American guards guarding the border have apparently been pretty cool so far. So
cool, man. But yeah, but I think if they want something on you, though, that's when the problems begin. If you
right.
get pulled over and they start asking you all the questions,
yeah,
and if they're looking for an excuse to turn you away, because this happened in the to go back a bit in the AIDS era, if they suspected you were homosexual, which there is no test for, if they thought you looked kind of gay, they could turn you away. So if they think you're kind of involved with marijuana and perhaps packing it, and this is probably a good reason to not have it on your credit card. I know it doesn't say marijuana purchase or cannabis
right.
purchase, but they know. So it's a wait and see. I'm only ever going to pay cash for the stuff. If I indeed decide to partake. But now that it's legal, I kind of have to. It's like bucket list stuff, right? And I'm rewriting history. But anyway, yeah.
All right, that's
There's
enough.
No evidence. Pre-internet era stuff, it's like, yeah, whatever.
Okay, well, that kind of leads us into the next discussion, which is about the upcoming... In less than 1 year now.
October 21, 2019.
Federal election.
We'll be here.
I think the news this week has been focused on, again, not pot, but on the carbon tax, which is going to be imposed on four provinces, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Ontario, and New Brunswick, who decided to not put in a place or a carbon pricing plan or... had one put in place by a previous government and then not taken away again in a very specific case. I actually watched this press conference. I think it was on Tuesday.
So Trudeau went to Ford Nation Ground Zero to make the
yeah.
announcement. That's clever. That is actually...
Which, yeah.
That's
dick move
point.
Dick move
to Trudeau,
but bold.
Is Humber College or something?
Yeah.
Or Slumber Cottage Man? No, I don't know.
Anyway,
yeah, when a Toronto joke.
What I found interesting watching this press conference was like in like the whiplash, the 180 degree whiplash in 1 second, where a reporter asked like, "Is this like a scheme to like make people pay like this outrageous new tax?" And then it goes to the other end where somebody said like, "Is this an election cash giveaway?" And it's like, it can't be both, people. It can't be both.
Those are the reporters
it can't
the
be taking your wallet yeah. out of your pocket and throwing cash in the air for you to grab like a game show. He can't be doing both at the same time, which I think the discussion of this is like indicative of, unfortunately, the mainstream media in this country that were focused on is it a dodge, instead of saying, like, focusing on the main thing, which is that intergovernmental panel on climate change a couple of weeks ago that said, you know, we have 12 years before the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I had to complain about today.
Oh, no, I understand fully, because it is one of those things, but because... somehow, even though it's a year away, we are in election mode. It has immediately become an election issue. And what keeps getting mentioned is that it's going to be the nastiest. Trudeau is like, it's going to be nasty. Andrew Scheer, it's going to be nasty. Haven't really heard much from Jagmeet Singh other than the fact that we talked a bit about it. He's going to be running on the West Coast.
Which that by-election hasn't even been called yet.
It hasn't been called yet. So he's been left hanging, and it's not clear as to whether the other parties... Normally, a leader of the other party gets a bit of a pass from the major parties and say, okay, well, you know, you should be able to get in the house. We're not going to run anybody against you, right? Something else that's been happening in NDP land is people stepping down to do other things.
Yeah.
They lost the seat in Nanaimo, Ladysmith. Sheila Malcolmson's going to run for the provincial NDP, which I... Did they not just have a provincial election? Like...
Last year.
So it seems like an early time to step down. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, I think the person who was in her seat is now the mayor of Nanaimo.
Ah, okay. So they're doing a bit. They're doing the shuffle.
I mean, it is interesting that it's like the eighth departure or announced departure for the NDP.
Yep.
And it was. It seems like it's more about buttressing the NDP government in British Columbia. If you know the numbers, the NDP needs this seat if they're going to pass the budget in February and survive a confidence motion. Because I think it's Liberals and NDP are tied, the difference makers, the three green MLAs. So they need the seat.
Right.
And, you know, why not
so
go with experience?
Send a veteran to defend the...
Well, and Malcolmson isn't even that big a veteran. She's been in the House since 2015.
But in the scheme of things, like she's been elected at least.
Yeah,
once.
She's been elected.
So okay, not veteran, but at least she's not completely.
It's fascinating.
Green lowercase,
right? But it's fascinating that this is the move that they are sort of sacrificing.
It's like, is there no one else?
The federal party to buttress the provincial party in BC.
Yes,
it's very short term gain for long term pain, I think.
And then another opening, I guess, which I heard about this morning, was Boris Zyesnevsky in Etobicoke Center, which is also Ford Nation Central. Not many seats like that kind of open up in the GTA, I think.
No.
So talk about bailing early. He hasn't bailed. He just said he wasn't going to run again. So I think they'll be salivating. on the right, on the Tories in particular. Well, of course, everybody wants the seat. Everybody wants a seat in the GTA because those are golden. As we know, it's Ontario and Quebec pretty much win the whole thing. If you win all of Ontario,
right,
you pretty much got it. So, not to toot Ontario's horn at all. Now, as to whether, there's the, I guess, new factors on the horizon, like the emerging People's Party, but I don't think it's going to make too much of a difference.
Well, not much has been written about them lately. No. I don't know if that's because just like lack of resources and the fact there's like been municipal elections and things, but
maybe a little more attention in Quebec.
It looks in Saskatchewan, it looks like that's might be where
they're loving the People's Party, really.
He's getting Maxime Bernier is getting these like founding meetings going. There's going to be 14 of them in Saskatchewan, and nine have already been organized.
How about that?
So, I mean, that seems like where the active center for the People's Party is going to be. If the
center of the country, sort of,
if it holds. But at the same time, what that's got to be concerning to Andrew Scheer, who we haven't mentioned yet, and the Conservatives, is that that's also prime Conservative real estate. I mean, that's...
Yeah, so if we see the splits like from the days of Reform and the Alliance, then that could ding them and help the Liberals because they don't have very many in the... It's always just...
Or NDP.
Or NDP for that matter, yeah.
We
were born in Saskatchewan.
Right.
Pretty much.
But it's fascinating that it seems to be Saskatchewan where there are the conservative... Where it's like conservative heartland there. The thing we haven't talked about yet is what the effect of like the rise of populist leaders like Ford is going to be, because and this goes back to sort of bring us full circle, the municipal election, because you had Faith Goldie who won 25,000 votes,
which was 25,000 too many.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
But I think what people are going to take away, in so much as that was an exercise on the part of Faith Goldie to keep her name in the news, is that a lot of people are going to see that, like, oh, people want that, we're going to card people of color and we're going to
kill them.
Yeah, we're going to card people of color. We're going to keep our eyes on the mosques and look at their finances, and we're going to throw all the illegal people out of Toronto, which were actually three planks of her mayoral campaign. But I mean, more specifically, the people like Nick Kovalis, a.k.a. John Tory's campaign manager, who congratulated her on Twitter for her campaign.
Of course.
Mike Diamond, who ran the Doug Ford leadership bid and then ran the successful PC election campaign in the spring. Also a fan. And if you can think of like maybe two people who are probably going to be involved in crafting conservative election strategy next year, those two guys are probably safe bets. So, I mean, you can't, I mean, you can, as much as you can discount Faith Goldie, you can't discount that she has fans in the proper conservative circles. People are going to be influence peddling in the next election and having a big say in how the National Conservative Party runs.
Conrad Black.
Conrad Black, yeah, he's another one.
Idiots. Oh, sorry. In my opinion. It just came out.
Now he's never going to come on the show.
I didn't swear.
Now he's never coming on the show.
Anyway. You know, I draw the... Were we talking about this on election night? I was like, yeah, the wide political whatever, left, right, I don't care. But I draw the line at Nazis or the Nazi-affiliated.
Right.
If you're going to say the 14 words anywhere, then I'm afraid, yeah, just no. So,
but
it has to be addressed
just,
at every turn.
Right. It's just scary that we all, in Andrew Scheer, we already have somebody who has ties to people inside rebel media. And, you know, it's going back to Trudeau's comment about how nasty it's going to be. Well, you know, this is a pretty good indication. You have all these sort of stalwart people who were also there when Stephen Harper was running.
They don't hide it.
Yeah, it is.
Is it going to be pipe bomb nasty, though? That's the question.
That's a good question.
When you're associated with that gang, and they are a gang, then,
right.
In my opinion, then that's what you get.
Depending on what influence the People's Party and Bernier have, it may end up having a conservative party go more to the right instead of to the center in order to try and secure those base voters, which means having to go more Nazi, and by Nazi I mean Nazi.
Yeah,
and that's a scary idea.
Having to parrot Bernier talking points, which will probably make Bernier feel good, but
adding to that is that we don't know what Andrew Scheer stands for. I don't think he stands for Nazism and for white supremacy.
He stands for get rid of Trudeau.
He stands for get rid of Trudeau.
Which is all that Harper really
stood
for.
But what does that even freaking mean?
It doesn't mean anything. It's an empty shirt at this point.
And this week he's like criticizing carbon tax. Okay, that's fine. What's your plan?
Same with marijuana.
Marijuana.
Was that the mumbling about maybe getting rid of it.
And then a lot of conservatives came out and said, yeah. Because a lot of conservatives are also libertarian who also want to partake. And there were, I saw that a lot of people online saying,
well, the free markets, we're happy.
Right.
A lot of people are making money, we're good.
I saw so many people who said, like, I lean conservative, but if he takes a stand about pulling marijuana legalization, I'm out. So he walks that back. And then the other thing is NAFTA. A couple of weeks ago after the NAFTA agreement or the new USMCA was signed in principle, he's like, well, I could have got a better deal for Canada. It's like, how? How would you have gotten a better deal for Canada? Is it you just like saying things because Trudeau gets something
done?
Well,
it looked like Harper wanted to get a better deal when he deked down there to talk trade, right? But
well, I think Stephen Harper's more interested in trying to rewrite his own history. But
I wonder if he has any marijuana shares.
Oh, no doubt. It just seems like Andrew Scheer is going to have to define himself soon, or I think others are going to end up defining him. And
because either that or Trudeau is going to really have to mess up. But the trend is there are so many provincial governments that have gone conservative. It's usually the federal government goes the opposite way. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's my prediction 1 year out. It's like unless Trudeau really, really drops the ball somehow.
Well, it's going to be a referendum on Trudeau. It's not going to be a change election. So Andrew Scheer needs to think about that. And we're going to think about coming back next week. You can stay connected to us all week long at opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire or on Twitter at OS_Guelph. And you can hear this and past episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donson or go to guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com. And under the influence of whatever, I wrote a little poem last week about the marijuanas. And you can find it on Spanner Book.
All right. And you can find DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back here next week for more Open Sources Thursdays at 5 here on the radio. And we'll see you then. We'll be right back.